Bet365 sponsors Pod on the Tyne, and they feature over 300,000 sporting events on their betting app. It's got everything you need to bet on sport. The new season is underway, and Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorer. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. With the Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Hello everybody and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to podcast about Newcastle United, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is Taylor Payne and I am joined, of course, as always, by Mr. George Corkin. How are you doing, George?
I'm fair to middling, thank you very much. How are you?
Wonderful. That's pretty good for you though, isn't it? That's a really good day for you.
Oh, that's an uptick. That's definitely an uptick, yeah.
And we've also got Mr. Michael Walker back on the podcast. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, no problem. It's lovely to hear your dulcet tones. And this time, with the added bonus of you not having to look at us in a studio.
that is a bonus, definitely.
Yeah, so we don't have to separate you and George when you have another argument about John Joe Shelby. Sounds all right, doesn't it?
I kind of had to apologise for that because I was very wrong. I mean, so we did that. The title of that podcast was called "Is John Joe Shelby a Liability?" And then he immediately came into the team and did really well.
He did, yeah. Making you look like quite the prat. Anyway, there's lots and lots of stuff going on at the minute. We've done some... Well, yeah, there's all sorts of things going on. Not necessarily anything to do with Newcastle or football, but there's loads going on.
Not in a good way.
No. We put a call out on Twitter earlier on for some questions from the listeners and from followers and stuff like that. And we've got a host of them to get through. So, first question is from Kev Lawson on Twitter. And he's asked, what does the panel... Panel? Is this a panel? Is this have I got news for you? What does the panel think would represent a positive transfer window for Newcastle this summer, and which players would represent a real improvement to the squad? Go for it, George. What do you reckon?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, that, and it's a great question because how do you judge success or positivity at this point for Newcastle? So compared to the players that we kind of thought they might be looking at a couple of months ago. It's difficult to know how to answer that. I mean, I think, I'm sure Michael would probably say the same thing. I think it's absolutely key that they get a centre forward this summer. And by centre forward, I mean somebody who's capable of scoring goals as opposed to the fellow that was brought in for a lot of money last summer who can't. I mean, I just think that is absolutely fundamental. And, you know, it needs to be somebody who can hold the ball up, who can score goals, and who can, you know, who can capitalise on what Saint-Maximin and Almiron in particular sort of bring to the pitch. So, I mean, I think that is the key. We also know that they're looking at centre-half, left-back, winger, and other positions. Do I think that if they got all those players that it would count as a positive transfer window? I'm not sure I can make that case. But if what are we relating it to? In terms of their chances of staying up, which is probably what we're looking at the minute, they just have to do that.
Michael, what do you think?
If you're relating it to how it stands at the minute, then, you know, buying a centre forward of some status or potential, that would be positive. That might not make the overall window positive, but it would at least be a positive move. The question is how much they have to spend, what are they prepared to spend, how much do they need for other replacements. But if you had to do one thing, it would be to buy a centre forward who can score goals, and that might cost 20 or 30 million. And if that's your total budget, I would put it all into a centre forward. And because I think they need it that much, and I think the team needs it that much as well. There are still decent players in that team, especially, you know, on the wings, you've got Almiron and you've got St Maximum. And I know they people see their deficiencies, but they have strengths. And if they had a goal scoring centre forward between them, that would be quite dynamic, or has the potential to be dynamic. But it's who that centre forward is, and how, as I say, how much you're prepared to pay for him, and then whether it's a fast running centre forward or a sort of back to goal centre forward, which I don't think they need a back to goal centre forward. I think it's just finding that particular player who would suit those two players around him, I think.
I think a Rondon player, I mean, I know it's ancient history and it's very boring, but I mean, I wish he'd stayed last summer, because they found a way of playing with, you know, with a front three, and you could see St Maximin fitting into that very well. At least I can, you know, somebody who can hold the ball, who can bring those players back in, they can get the ball up the pitch and not risk losing it so early. And, you know, Rondon has never been prolific. He's certainly not been prolific here, but the value that he brought to those other players, you know, I would like a player like that, someone, you know, a proper centre forward who can get the ball, who can keep the ball, who can take the pressure off the team and get them up the pitch. I mean, yes, somebody who is not averse to scoring goals. As at the moment, they have a centre forward who can't score, so that is no use to anybody. Rondon can score. You know, that kind of player can score, but I think it's probably asking too much to get a prolific centre forward with the budget that they have. But they need a centre forward, and they need somebody who can come in and give them that straight away.
You have to think about value and be realistic about who you can buy, you know. So, I mean, it would be great if Newcastle could go and buy Danny Ings, but I don't think they. You know, do they have the money to do that? Could they go and buy Ollie Watkins from Brentford? I mean, he's linked with Aston Villa. And he could play up front. I mean, he was really, really good and scored 25-ish goals last season in the Championship. You know, he's fast, aggressive, could definitely do it. I don't know what the budget is. You know, Steve Bruce might tell you that the budget's £12 million or whatever. I don't know.
Well, it seems the budget is around the 30-35 million mark. Again, with Newcastle, we're never quite sure what that means and how that gets split up. The striker that they're certainly been looking at is Callum Wilson at Bournemouth, as indeed have Villa. I think he would add something. I think he would be a decent signing. Right now, we're offering listeners to this show the opportunity to try out The Athletic for free. You can enjoy all of our writing on Newcastle United. Including a recent article from Chris Woff on Newcastle's young players attempting to break through this season. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to sign up for a 30-day free trial. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod.
You have to be careful as well, though, don't you? Because we kind of stumbled over this a little bit when we signed Rondon, in that we signed him so late in the window that he wasn't prepared for the start of the season. He wasn't firing on all cylinders, and it took him about half the season to actually get up to speed. He was largely ineffective for them first sort of 6 or 7 games. And you have to be careful. You cannot leave it too late, because we need somebody who's going to come in and bed into the squad. And I know... You know, I know as the window goes on, you hope that prices are going to go down as clubs get desperate to shift their players on and stuff like that. But I don't think we have the time to be pissing about with this. It needs to be sorted quick.
That's interesting, because there was a question from Stu, which is a bit further down our list. Why does it feel like the club are dragging their heels in terms of strengthening the team where it's desperately needed? I mean, this is a long-standing complaint about the club that... and again, this is something that Benitez talked about all the time when he talked about doing things right. It's not just about buying the right players or signing the right players. It's about moving at the right time and then moving quickly. It's just never been a strength of the club. And do I think there are mitigating circumstances this summer? There definitely are, because, you know, most clubs are in the same boat in terms of having limited resources and this strange you know, this strange period where it's a much shorter pre-season, but the window staying open longer. And so the temptation will be to wait and wait and wait until October and try and make the most of your money. But of course, there are big risks associated with that, including, as you say, Taylor, that whoever you bring in may not be sharp enough, and so you lose out. Yeah. You might lose out on a month of fitness or getting fit to save a few bob, and so you don't actually save the money at all.
Because as it stands, Newcastle will go to West Ham with Andy Carroll up front. Is that correct?
God, yeah.
Well, yeah, unless Mutu or somebody else kind of comes back into it. But no, I mean, that's effectively where things stand at the minute, and that is pretty terrifying. Yeah,
is Andy keeping the wheel clamped this year, or was that just for last year? that's what it looks like he's playing with every week to me. It looks like he's got a clamp on. He's very immobile, isn't he? He's very immobile, bless him. Took his goal well, mind, against, was it Crewe Alexander? He took his goal well, a little flick over the head and then volleyed it. Yeah? Different in the Premier League, though, isn't it?
Yes,
different,
it is.
Very different. Let's move on to the next question from Kevin Monaghan. Also, Sarge, Steve, Jackson, Daniel Blackburn, they've all asked about Matt Ritchie potentially leaving Mutada. Possible swap deal involving Callum Wilson to Bournemouth. We all know Matt Ritchie's long-standing connection with Bournemouth, and he still has a family home there and stuff like that as well. How are we feeling about that? Would this be a bad thing? George, I know you're a big fan of Matt Ritchie, so come on, you jump in on this.
I am, yes, I am. I mean, the other sort of context for that is Newcastle potentially signing Ryan Fraser, who is on a free transfer after leaving Bournemouth. There's a lot of Bournemouth. After leaving relegated Bournemouth, and I guess that would probably be the more obvious part. I mean, yes, okay, perhaps, but potentially you could fit into a swap deal. Swap deals are always very, very problematic and complicated, and very rarely can actually happen. But it would be, I guess, it would effectively be swapping Fraser for Ritchie. I mean, I would. That would make me very sad. Not only because of what Ritchie brings to the squad and the team, but what he's also done over the last few years, being a integral part of the squad that got promoted back to the Premier League and has kept the squad there for the last three seasons. It's probably less about what he does as a player. Than what he does as a fella, and that's not to say that he's not a good player, but probably doesn't score enough goals, probably doesn't make enough goals, but he just has that extraordinary energy and drive and determination and those things which are really sort of...
Is that enough though, George? Is it enough?
Well, is it enough to make him a top six Premier League player, top 10 Premier League player? No, I don't think it is.
Is it enough to be a Premier League player, though? This is the thing.
No, I don't. Yeah, of course.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. Obviously, I love Matt Ritchie, but...
Yeah, I mean, but he's...
I think we need more than that.
Yeah, but he's been... I mean, where are Newcastle in the Premier League? They're in the Premier League. I mean, they're in the bottom half or thereabouts. And he's, I think probably in terms of skill... all that sort of stuff. He's a brilliant championship player and then he's a sort of bottom half Premier League player. But that's where Newcastle have been over the last few years. And he just has that incredible attitude, which is, which I love. And of course, that kind of leads on to another question from Carlito 83, who says, who would replace Ritchie as the most Raj member of the team? And it is that Rajiness. It is that sort of anger, the anger with himself, the anger with corner flags, the anger with the ball, the anger with his teammates, the anger with all of that stuff, which is very, very funny, but is also really valuable. It's really valuable to have that in a team. Someone who never lets up, someone who never shuts up, someone who... harangues the referee, someone who just demands better, who pushes for more. He is that kind of player. And yeah, I think that sort of character would be a huge miss if he leaves.
I think it'd be quite alarming for fans that a deal to bring Callum Wilson would, if it does, if it's a necessity that Matt Ritchie goes, I think that's quite, you know, can Newcastle not afford to sign Callum Wilson just like that on his own without having to
probably
lose,
not, to be honest,
lose a player of Ritchie's influence? And even if they did sign Ryan Fraser, you'd still want Matt Ritchie. I wouldn't, if I was a Newcastle fan, I wouldn't want to see Matt Ritchie leave, and I would be concerned if it was an incoming transfer was dependent on his departure.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him to leave. I wouldn't. I think he's incredibly valuable. He was out of the team for a kind of stretch last season, but I just think what he offers, it isn't just about the pitch, but it is still on the pitch. It's not that it's, you know, you get a sense of his worth when he's not there, and he is a driving force. I've never thought that Newcastle have a very noisy team. They don't have a, you know, that's not the sort of players they have, but Ritchie makes up for that on his own. And no, I love him. I love him.
Just following on from that and the talk on Matt Ritchie potentially leaving, question number five, this has just come from Ian. George compiled these questions and he's not written any kind of identifying info on here apart from it came from a bloke called Ian. Did you meet him in the pub or was that online?
Well, that was Ian. That was his. That's just, I haven't done their full Twitter names. I've done the names that they call themselves on Twitter.
Ian. This one's from Ian. Who in the current squad...
It's Ian who's specifically asked this question. That should be recognisable.
Do you know this Ian? Or do you know Ian? No, right, okay. It could be any Ian. Could be Ian Botham. Could be anyone. Number five, Ian, who in the current squad can you see being moved on? So just to go on from the Matt Ritchie thing, who else do we think could potentially move on here? Because there's been lots of talk about centre-halves coming in as well, hasn't it? And it feels like there's almost too many of them at the minute. And then you factor into that some of the links to other centre-halves. It seems maybe that could be a position where somebody could leave. I don't know.
Yes, so sort of a bit of context for that is that our colleague David Ornstein has written that Newcastle are leading the race or are kind of very close to signing Rob Holding on loan from Arsenal. Holding is another centre-half. Actually, I'm going to ask Michael about Holding because you're a kind of, you watch Arsenal a fair bit, you like Arsenal. What would he bring that the other centre-halves at Newcastle don't have?
I don't know. I don't know if he would bring enough difference to what they have. The focus shouldn't be on Newcastle defensively. The focus needs to be on Newcastle creatively. I know what you mean. I mean, he's to me, he's not massively different from Fernandes, or Shaw. You know, so I don't see. You know, a huge difference in him from what they have already. You know, maybe there are stats that prove that he's much more dynamic. You know, I don't know, but I visibly I don't see that. I don't see a huge difference.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That was kind of what I was sort of interested in, really, because I on the face of it, I didn't really see that either. I suppose. Fabian Cher kind of went out of the team a bit last season. He's injured. He certainly lost favour. He's injured now. He's out for another 5 weeks or so with a dislocated shoulder. So that may not help in terms of him leaving. There has also, you know, there are also concerns about Lejeune and his fitness, and a suggestion that one or both of those may be vulnerable in terms of leaving. So I guess.
Oh well, in that case, then it's about replacing bodies, you know, with bodies. But I mean, you know, what does Jamal Lascelles think, you know, about Rob Holding? He probably sees a fairly similar player to himself.
Yeah, fair enough. But okay, so fine. But in terms of people who, so yeah, there are six centre halves at the last count. So you would think that there might be room there to pick up a bit of money, albeit with the stuff that I've said there about fitness and things like that. I mean, you've still got players in the squad. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe some of these people left 3 years ago and I just haven't noticed. But I mean, Henri Stivet who is still there. Isn't he?
Lazar, it was 5.5 years when he signed it.
Good bit of business. Lazar is back. I think Rolando Ahrens is back. Jacob Murphy, we've seen, has actually played a bit of a part.
I think Sisko still plays for us, doesn't he? Curtis Good.
Christianatsu is back. And then there are people.
Kuchi Onyewu. I share a birthday with him. He's born on exactly the same day, same year as me. And every year on Twitter, I send him a message saying "Happy birthday," and he doesn't fucking reply ever.
This is a podcast in itself. The incredible disappearing Newcastle United football, or the never quite disappearing Newcastle football.
Incredible reappearing Newcastle football. Murphy and people like that.
And there's Muto, of course, as well, who barely figures. The problem, of course, is that with some of these players, that they're going to be on decent money in terms of the Premier League or below, and you know it will be a struggle to get rid of those players. So, but you know all of them would be, you know, you would listen to offers for them, wouldn't you?
George, just to be sure, Jack Colback has gone, hasn't he?
Jack Colback has indeed gone.
Oh, thank God for that.
He may come back at some point.
No, he can't.
He's gone.
He can't.
Okay, fine.
Gates are shut now. That's it.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Number seven. Actually, no, number six. Craig Allen. What other sport / team can I support, seeing as I can't possibly face another season of that? Well, I would say if you don't want to go and watch Newcastle anymore, go and support your local non-league team. Do that. That's what I would say. But
I went to Dunstan on Friday night, which we'll come to later, no doubt. So you could walk across and watch Dunstan.
Yeah,
and those non-league teams need support.
They certainly do,
of course, more than ever at the moment. I mean, I would say the same thing, just as a matter of course, on those kind of rare weekends. Slightly different now since I've been at the Athletic, but on those weekends when I didn't have a match report to do in my previous job, I would love going to watch Heaton Stannington or one of those great Northern League teams, and just having that sort of day where you can turn up 5 to 3, get yourself a pint and a programme, a really good programme, stuff to read it, and stand right next to it and watch the game. And it does refresh. It sort of refreshes the head, getting there, not having to look at Twitter, not having to
put
all that kind of stuff. So joking aside, I would definitely recommend that. But yeah, we will talk a bit more about Michael and non-league a little later.
I've had some fabulous afternoons out at South Shields over the last few years when there hasn't been Newcastle football going on. I've been down there and watching those guys, and honestly, the atmosphere is great. It's such a good place.
It is. It's really good. Yeah.
And that's you know, their story is absolutely astonishing. I mean, they're the closest. They're the closest you could have to a league team that is still non-league. I mean, what they've done there over the past few years has been incredible and huge,
and for numbers. The community as well. You know, there's kids in my little boy's class who wear South Shields shirts to their football training and stuff like that, and that's amazing. You know, see Shields shirts in amongst all the Barcelona tops and the Man City shirts and stuff like that, and there's a kid wearing a Shields shirt. It's great. I love seeing stuff like that. It's fantastic. Wouldn't it be great if every clothing store you shopped at only had your size?
does anyone have your size?
Not anymore, they don't. No, not after lockdown. The styles you like and everything at the price you want. Well, Stitch Fix is a company focused on doing just that. It's an online personal styling company that makes getting the clothes that you love simple. It's a completely different way to shop, and it's all about you. To get started, go to Stitch Fix. If you're Sean Connery, to get started, go to Stitch Fix.
Go to Stitch Fix, perhaps. I've lost my sex appeal.
Ah, George, you're a shite for sure eyes. Go to stitchfix.co.uk/time to set up your profile, and they'll deliver great looks personalised just for you. You'll pay £10 styling for each fix, which is credited towards anything you keep scheduled at any time with no subscription. Delivery and returns are completely free and easy, so you can always send back items that aren't right for you. Get Get started with Stitch Fix today by going to stitchfix.co.uk/Tyne right now. And make sure you use our show name to support our podcast. That's stitchfix.co.uk/Tyne. So, number seven. On the same sort of subject, Jonathan Colin Chris F. Lee Robson basically asks us to talk about anything other than Newcastle or say they've given up caring. This Dave asks if there's anything to get excited about now. Any kids on the fringes of the first team who we should be excited about?
Well, Chris actually wrote a piece about that. It was either at the end of last week or this week. It's out this week. And that was the kind of subject that a writer from every club has had to do something on. Who is there to look forward to, you know? And yeah. Chris's answer to that was actually nobody. but for once it was kind of a positive answer, because right. A lot of those players are actually now going out on loan, and this has been the loan system has been a problem at Newcastle, where players either haven't gone out on loan and they've kind of stuck around and not really got anywhere, or they've gone on loans and not played elsewhere. And it's something that the club appears to be taking seriously. And then that also leads on to another piece that's been on The Athletic this week, written by Chris and Stu James, and it's about Freddie Woodman. And there's actually, there's chatting to various people who've been around Freddie Woodman's development. Of course, he's young goalkeeper, very, very gifted, has played for England at under 20 level, wasn't it? Won the
yes,
World
that's
Cup.
Right. Yeah, saving penalties and shootouts and everything.
Yeah. And so, but hasn't found a way through at Newcastle yet. He's just gone back to Swansea and another season's loan. And it was talking, you know, it was talking about that whole scenario. So the good thing is that Newcastle are sending those players out and they're getting football. Can we talk about anything else other than football? I mean, we can. I mean, it's sort of. I mean, we often do. I mean, with Chris not here, we've lost a sort of. Yeah. We've lost.
Oh, a meat specialist.
We've lost a meat sausage specialist. So I'm not really sure what the. I'm
not good at that.
Michael isn't good on any kind of human interaction kind of thing. Taylor, you've not been very well recently, so
no,
you know,
I'm riddled.
I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure we're offering much positivity there.
Well, what I can say on the subject of young players is that having been to a couple of those under 18 games last year, you know, there are a couple of boys there, but you're just reluctant to get ahead of, you know, yeah. talking up. You know, Elliot Anderson and Joe White, but they're both clearly accomplished footballers at their age. Now, whether they, you know, where they are in 2 years' time, and is another matter. And let's hope they progress. And Newcastle did sign Regan Thompson, didn't they? The Scottish lad who's yes. really yeah. good. You know, so there may be some positivity there, but it feels removed from the first team situation at the minute.
Is Shola Amiobi still involved in the loan deals that we do? I know he was in charge of loans, wasn't he, at one point? Which is a bit of a strange appointment. Is he still there?
I believe so, yeah. I think he's their loan arranger. Loan arranger.
Loan arranger.
Loan arranger.
Yeah, yeah. The loan arranger.
but that's a position, you know, most clubs have, you know, like Chelsea have Carlo Cudicini in charge of their
wow,
loans. You know, it's like it's that's quite a, you know, especially whenever you're Chelsea and you're sending out 288 yeah. players on loan, you need someone to look after it.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Moving on to something a little bit more uplifting to take over.
Oh God. Fuck's sake.
George's favourite subject in the world. I haven't had a chance to talk to you much, George, over the last couple of weeks, because obviously you were off for a couple of weeks and then I was away for a week, so we haven't really had much of our wonderful takeover banter. King of Northumbria, Jake, Al, Ed, James, Lucas B, David Pick, Sean and James Bolham all ask about the takeover. Where things stand with Amanda Staveley's led consortium, and how do we interpret their silence following the brilliant work of the fans and the NUST in mobilising support for the takeover and asking the Premier League for transparency? That was a big sentence. There was also a report suggesting that Staveley and the rest of the bid, the rest of them, didn't have appetite to resurrect the bid. I read about that yesterday as well. So where do we stand on that at the minute, George?
Yes, I mean, so it is with a heavy heart that I begin this sentence. But really, only because it's the subject that dare not speak its name. What I said last week was that, you know, we are in this kind of strange position where the bidders have pulled out and yet still remain committed, to use their phrase, and Mike Ashley indeed remains committed. And having had that sort of huge, I mean, brilliant response from Newcastle fans to get engaged, to sort of ask the Premier League for some transparency, to get make contact with MPs. There was then that very detailed response from Richard Masters, of the Premier League, so detailed. It far more detailed than any journalist has been able to get. That there's kind of almost been this, you know, perhaps feeling of deflation, or that momentum has kind of been lost. Fans have done absolutely everything that they were asked to do, came together, united, and then since then, sort of silent. So what was the point of all that then? And I completely get that. What I said last week was that it's having got those politicians involved, that it's moved to a sort of political level, and that if there's going to be any kind of movement, that will be where it comes from. But I also said that if anything's going to happen, it needs to happen without daily updates. It needs to happen with silence. And the next thing we need to hear about from Amanda Staveley or the consortium or anybody else, actually, is that it's either happening or it's definitively off. I don't think, I mean, does what the Premier League said leave questions to be answered? Absolutely. You know, it really does. But do I think there's a worth for those questions to be answered right now? No, I don't. Is what Newcastle fans did been in vain? I would argue categorically not, for the very obvious reason that it did get a response from Richard Masters, and it did get a commitment to either change the owners and directors test or change the way it's communicated. Now, I've seen people say, how does that benefit Newcastle? You know, effectively, that will benefit other clubs. Well, Newcastle still have an owner who wants out, and so that will benefit Newcastle, if not immediately, then somewhere down the line. But the other effect that that response to Newcastle fans had was in reminding everybody, and I'm including the prospective buyers on this, just how powerful Newcastle is, can be, just how much people want the takeover to happen. And that has been, believe me, that has been noticed. And so am I back, you know, this is a very long-winded answer and I'm really not saying very much, but sort of in May, I was absolutely convinced that this would happen, you know, that the takeover would happen finally, because I just thought that money wins. Am I sitting here now thinking it's definitely going to happen? No, categorically not. I'm getting on with my life, and I would really recommend that everybody else does the same thing, and assuming, you know, that we're stuck with this position at the moment. Is this takeover, this version of the takeover, completely dead? No, it's not. But I still find it very difficult to see a pathway for it to get resolved in a positive manner. But it isn't dead. I know there's a feeling of kind of people being let down or this sort of vacuum. But honestly, I think the next thing we need to hear is that it's either finished for good or that there's been a positive resolution.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think a lot of fans are just kind of fed up the whole thing now. And, you know, the minute that this kind of stopped being a will it, won't it sort of situation, we got a load of other noise and interest from other parties. The Belegraph Nova group popped up and with their wonderful photoshopped pictures of Barack Obama, which Reuters actually this morning have reported that they're full of shit. I mean, I might be paraphrasing slightly.
But what a shock. What a shock that is to all of us.
But that was the... Yeah, I mean, wow, what a surprise. I think it surprised Michael Chopra more than it did a lot of the rest of us. But bless it. So that is done now, apparently. And then we've also got the magical disappearing Mr. Henry Maurice, who was all ready to go, officially had made a £350 million bid a couple of weeks ago, according to...
I think that was the problem. I think it was 350 quid plus add-ons.
Yeah, the problem was he made that bid in ASDA vouchers, not in actual money. So we've struggled a little bit, haven't we, over the last couple of weeks? There's been a lot of noise and confusion and not an awful lot of information. It's been a bit of a shitstorm, hasn't it? But not to worry. Moving on.
It feels like Mike Ashley will be in charge this season.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I think we have to, you know, I do think we have to assume that. And, you know, I think that's just where we are. I'm certainly assuming that. But I just think that, I mean, I know that one thing that is really kind of regretted, and you won't get anybody owning up to it, but that leak to the Wall Street Journal in January when... it kind of all came out, and it sort of forced all of us to respond and react. Was catastrophic, and I don't know what the catastrophic in the sense that it shone a light on something that should have been happening behind the scenes. I'm not saying that would have eventually meant that it would have gone through, because as we've seen, there are, you know, pretty big reasons why the Premier League think it couldn't, but. That just daily sort of drip of stories and objections and protest and all that kind of stuff just didn't serve anybody any use. And I just think we have to be beyond that now. So although I know that there is still huge interest and there is still, you know, just absolute desperation for kind of news and for stuff to be kind of reported, and it does feel like it does feel unresolved in the sense that there should be a response from Staveley. I also think that for now things just have to stay quiet. And I again, to repeat, I think the next thing we should hear should be, you know, a definitive end or a definitive end one way or the other.
Matt Slater's piece about Richard Scudamore and his sort of group mentioned Newcastle a couple of times, which I thought was quite interesting, just that it was mentioned. Those two things were mentioned in the same article. I thought that was quite interesting. I don't know if it means anything.
No, it was interesting. And, you know, the other thing to say is that every single time, I mean, the last time that Staveley tried to buy the club, the following summer, you know, I kept in touch with her a little bit, and the following summer she actually said, does he really want to sell? You know, does he really want to sell? And that was a few months later. The thing that if you talk to them, if you talk to others, if you talk to people around the club, the one thing that nobody doubts anymore is that Ashley does want out and he does want to sell. And so I've never, I mean, to say I'm more confident of that than ever seems a strange thing to say, bearing in mind what's happened this summer. But, you know, I think that's genuine. No, people aren't questioning that anymore. He wants out. And so it will happen at some point. You know,
That brings us back to the discussion about recruitment. Because if Mike Ashley is there really reluctantly, then that's not something you can base a recruitment plan on.
No, that's a funny, interesting argument, because I think you go back through most managers, you know, that have served under Ashley, and they've all gone through that same thing. It's about how do we get Mike interested? How do we get him engaged? How do we make him focus on the club and give the club a bit of love and resources and stuff like that? And he has these sort of weird spikes of interest, but unfortunately, the spikes of interest aren't necessarily what you want, because there was a spike of interest, 40 million frigging quid for Gillington. And, you know, what was all that about? You know, offering to pay 20 million of that from his own money so it wouldn't come out of the club's budget and things like that. That his interest is not necessarily a good thing. In fact, quite often it's a bad thing. But are Newcastle ever going to kick on and progress with an owner who wants out? No, probably not. Are Newcastle going to progress and kick on with Mike Ashley as owner anyway? No. So it's about keeping Ashley engaged enough so that there's enough investments and Newcastle don't go down. But really, I don't really see that as being very different from like life under Mike Ashley for the past 13 years anyway.
I've said a couple of times that it feels like it's almost the last Friday afternoon of his 2 weeks' notice at a really shit job. And he's kind of, you know, he's got his feet on the desk, he's photocopied his arse and sent it to his boss a couple of times. He's just had enough, and he's like, I've clocked out now, I'm done. I'm not paying any interest to this anymore. And you feel really sad about that as a fan, because you think, well, you know, we're still here, we're still paying money, we're still going to, well, we're not going to games, but we will be going to games when we're allowed to. But it's so frustrating.
If things were normal, what do you think the first crowd of the season, home crowd of this season, would be?
That's a great question.
It would be 42,000 to 45,000 people, easy, if not more.
First one, I don't know, because I think last season quite a lot of people turned up on the first day, which was supposed to be a boycott, wasn't it? And but then the crowd dropped away. Then the crowd dropped away, and then
he handed out 10,000 free seats.
And then he handed out 10,000. It's a great question.
Yeah, but we're a year on from that.
I know. Yeah,
what,
I know.
So say there's a, you know, there's interest for the first game. The second home game is Newcastle Burnley. What do you think that would, if Newcastle's recruitment consists of Jeff Hendrick, what is the realistic crowd figure you would get for that game?
The simple answer is, I don't know. But I mean, I would be scared. I mean, I would be scared of that. And, you know, if you think that 10,000 people, how many of those people who came for free would be looking to buy a season ticket this time? I mean, it's not, you wouldn't think a huge amount. And you would think that quite a lot of people would have found something else to do. I wouldn't be surprised if it was in the 30s, the high 30s. But
I think there's an awful lot of people in that stadium who go out of routine, who, if they were allowed to fill the stadium, I don't think it would be far off it. I think you'd be looking at mid to high 40s regardless, because I think people just will go. I know we lost sort of 10,000 people before last season and the free season tickets and everything, but I don't think there's enough of an appetite for people to stop going yet.
Last season, Newcastle had signed, you know, regardless of how the money is spent, they had spent 40 million on Joe Linton, 25 million yeah. 6 months earlier on Almiron.
Saint-Maximin came in as well.
So they had actually made some signings. So there was, you know, there were reasons for, you know, those three players, you know, individually gave reasons for hope. This time around, the absence of recruitment is that doesn't excite people, you know, won't excite people enough to go.
It always feels like Newcastle, you're sort of the judgment is somehow delayed or you're kind of waiting for judgment. It's like, and this, you know, the second half of last season was such a sort of mirage in terms of the stadium being full. And so we couldn't quite sort of judge what people felt, because you knew that people, you know, 10th, I mean, it's a fifth of the crowd. It's a massive number, that. And you would just think that the way last season finished and the takeover then not happening would have the same sort of effect. Plus also the fact that then people are, so you, not only have you got 10,000 people, I mean, so presumably some of those 10,000 people were the same people who stopped going, but you've also then got people out of the habit of going, and out of the habit of, it's like, okay, well, I now have missed a few games, and am I really missing out? And why am I there in the first place? And having stepped back from it and seeing, watched it from the outside, in front of an empty stadium and all that, watching it on the television, do I want to start paying money again? Do I want to do that? Is it worth my while? Is it worth my time? All those things, you know, we just don't know. We're not going to know for the immediate future because we're not going to have full grounds for the immediate future. It's such a tough one. I mean, you would always kind of back the quote-unquote loyalty of Newcastle fans to turn up, except that something pretty fundamental was broken last season. And has anything happened in the meantime to repair that? And it categorically hasn't.
Let's move on. We've got a couple of questions to get through before we finish. That was a really long answer to a question I can't even remember at the start. I don't even know where that came from. But we've got a couple left to do. I want to get this one out because I think it's really important that we tackle this. Ian Armitage and Richard have both asked about furlough. Is it right / appropriate that the club is signing players for millions when it continues to use the furlough scheme? And why has COVID hit so hard in terms of transfer budget?
You know, in terms of furlough, that has been a kind of familiar but also very depressing story from the past few months. You know, Newcastle, the first club to go into furlough, and I think the last to come out, and I don't think they've ever talked about it publicly. I don't think Newcastle are the kind of worst example of this. There was the story about Arsenal, wasn't it, losing a lot of their non 55 staff at the same time. Yeah, at the same time as
Signing Willian. £1,000 a week or whatever.
Yeah. And so stuff like that is very difficult to get your head around and reconcile and things like that. And is very tough. At the same time, Arsenal, like the rest of Premier League clubs, effectively don't have a stadium. I mean, even when the stadium is back open again and games being played, it's with what is it? 200 people in the actual stadium, including. So the way clubs are working and the way clubs are having to do their business is obviously very, very different now than it was 6 months ago. But yeah, it does. It sticks in the throat, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, again, with Newcastle, part of the problem, or a big part of the problem, is just the lack of discussion about it, the lack of openness about it. They're just that sort of reluctance to acknowledge things like that, to explain. You know, quite often, I think it's, you know, difficult decisions do have to be made, whether it's in life, in football, in, you know, by governments, you know, whatever. We all have to make difficult decisions sometimes. I always think that those decisions are made easier, even if just a little bit, by talking about it and explaining and, owning up if it's a mistake or doing all that kind of stuff. And Newcastle don't do any of that. And they don't do it in, you know, a football club is not a human being, but they don't have that human touch. And it's very distressing.
There's something else I want to mention here, which is really, actually really pissing me off at the minute. I've read it a couple of times on Twitter in the last week or so, is people still waiting for refunds for those cancelled games and for cancelled season tickets. It's got to the point now where that needs sorted out, and it would take nothing to do that. They just need to get that sorted out. That's money that people have spent. In the times that we're in at the minute, when people are struggling, people have been furloughed, some people have lost their jobs. If you're self-employed, you know, you might have lost all your work. There's people who've lost money and who haven't been able to attend games, who've asked for refunds. They've been told they're getting them, and they're still waiting. And what are we, two and a bit weeks away from the start of the season? There's a chance the season could start, and people are still waiting for refunds from last season. That has to be sorted, and it has to be sorted now, straight away, as quick as possible. Thanks to our good pals at beer52.com, you have the opportunity to sip eight delicious, painstakingly sourced craft beers from around the world. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/athletic and pay the postage of just £4.95. And if that wasn't enough, as a listener to our show, you'll get an extra 2 free beers. So that's 10 free beers, George. When was the last time you had 10 free beers? Was it when you went out wearing that skimpy thing down the quayside?
Yeah, I got a lot of attention that night. Don't knock it.
I'm sure
you did.
Don't
knock it unless you try it.
I couldn't possibly pull that off. Beer 52 or Beer Pioneers, they travel the globe to find the best and most interesting beer from the very best craft breweries. They are now the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. The beauty of Beer 52 is that you can leave at any time. The power is in your hands, and they deliver the beers straight to your front door. You don't even need to leave the house, which is good because some people can't leave the house at the moment. I actually got a box of Beer 52 and it was very, very good. There was some fantastic cheeky little numbers in there. There was also a couple which left me slightly blind and feeling feeling very drunk, but that's okay. That's what it's for. Your case will also include the award-winning craft beer magazine Ferment, and a beery snack is thrown in too. That's what you are, George, aren't you? You're a beery snack.
Yeah, we drank some of those on the way to West Brom, didn't we? They were lovely.
Oh, we did, yeah. We did. Yeah. Oh, they were good. They were even better after a 3-2 win in the cup, but there you go. Just go to beer52.com/athletic now to get your free case. And don't forget, right now, listeners get two extra free beers. Final question. Final question. Matthew Laidlaw asks, maximum time spent leaving a teabag in the cup before removing?
Well, Teddy, why don't you tackle this one?
Well, I like a strong brew, I have to be honest. I like a strong brew, but with plenty of milk as well. So if you can't stand the spoon up in it, it's not strong enough as far as I'm concerned. So leave that teabag in a good week.
So is that kind of David Dickinson style colour? Is that, I mean, that's...
Oh, like a rich mahogany, yeah. Yeah. Lovely. No, a couple of minutes, you know, a couple of minutes, chuck a bit of milk
in. I'm terrible at making tea. I don't know why that is. I'm really terrible at making tea.
It's not difficult.
There's nothing worse in the world, though, is there, when someone asks you, oh, do you want a cup? And you say, oh, yeah. And they make you one and they hand you this milky piss with, like, it looks like it's just been shown
a
teabag.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
That's just not, you kind of, it's just been threatened with a teabag rather than actually having it brewed in it.
Maybe I just don't have the patience. I'm such a busy and important
man.
That's
what it is. That's what it is. You have many leather-bound books, I'm sure.
Yes.
Anyway.
What?
Oh, right. Thank you to all the listeners and the Twitter people for sending in those questions. I'm sorry if we didn't get to yours, and I'm sorry that I didn't have surnames for a lot of you or Twitter IDs, but George has just scribbled down whatever he could, and we've put them out there. Anyway, moving on. Michael, we want to talk to you a little bit about a piece that you're working on at the minute with regards to Harry Pearson. How's that?
Yes, the reason I was at Dunstan on Friday night was because I went with Harry Pearson to watch Dunstan v Blyth Spartans in a pre-season friendly, because Harry has written a sequel to The Far Corner called The Further Corner, and it's really good, as you would expect. The Far Corner was covered the 93-94 season when Harry was in his early 30s, and he went around various grounds in the Northeast, and it was called A Mazy Dribble through Northeast Football was its subtitle. And he went around and with these unpromising beginnings, he produced a classic, and I think it's a really loved book. It's not just, you know, well read. It's really loved and cherished. And talking to him, he was obviously offered the opportunity to write a sequel, you know, after 10 years, after 15 years, after 20 years or whatever. And eventually, after 25 years, he's gone back to it and written The Farther Corner. And he's whereas he had, you know, Newcastle and Middlesbrough and Sunderland in the first book, it's non-league this time and completely, and I'm saying that I better check.
I'm sure it is.
It's just him. It's just really funny, really droll. And rereading The Far Corner, what didn't sort of strike me, obviously, because he's, you know, obviously he's a very subtle writer as well, is that there was some social comment in The Far Corner, and there's a bit more obvious social commentary this time, and that's quite interesting. And he's talked about the not just the change in football in the Northeast since 1994, he's talked about the change in the Northeast as a place, and in some ways it's changed hugely, and in some ways it hasn't changed at all. And he's done it in his in Harry Pearson style, which is just really great. And I think there'll be a lot of people getting this over the next few months.
What you won't have got from Michael there is a sense of just how funny Harry Pearson is, mainly because Michael's such a very dry and serious man. But but the far corner is just it's hilarious.
It's laugh, I mean, out loud at every page. You know, it's really funny. Yeah.
What I kind of love about this image of Michael and Harry going to watch a match together is of course. You know, there's a very good argument there between the two of them. Who has written the definitive book about Northeast football? Because, of course, Michael, who far too modest to say this himself, wrote Up There, which is just a sensational book. If you've not read it, I'm sure it's still available from all good bookshops and places
and
like that.
And some bad ones as well.
And some bad ones. And I think those two books... complement each other in a admittedly they weren't written at the same time. Michael's book is much more contemporary, but they work, but there are no two better books about Northeast football. So I love the idea about Michael actually writing about Harry and Harry's new book. But if you've not read The Fantastic. Far Corner, you can still get it. It's absolutely brilliant.
Oh yeah, the Far Corner is just superb, and I'm just looking at it now. It's been reprinted and
yeah.
And it's still there. It's still in the bookshelves, and it's really worth reading. Either before you get to The Farther Corner, if you haven't read it, or
so is The Farther Corner out now, is it?
The Farther Corner came out last week, yeah. So
right,
it's in the bookshops in Newcastle and elsewhere as we speak. So
fantastic stuff.
And it's really, it's just him again. It's just brilliant. There's, I don't want to give away the lines, but he's just great. He's just a great, the thing about him is he's a great listener. And so he goes on trains and buses and taxis to games, and he just hears these lines and notes them down and puts them all together, and it's just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I think there's that, what it does do as well, it serves as that sort of reminder that you do all need sometimes, and we're very lucky, Michael and I, in our jobs, in the sense that we go around and we talk to people, and you kind of remember why football is good, even when the football itself is bad. That football, the football is good, and football people are good. And why I'd always recommend going to non-league if you're feeling a bit jaded about Newcastle or whatever, and we all are, that you do get that sense of why people are there, why people do things. It takes a lot of dedication to be involved in non-league football. And okay, fine, players get a bit of money and things like that, but really you have to
vast majority are volunteers.
The vast majority, that's the point I was going to make. As a country, we wanked on about the volunteers during the Olympics in 2012, and what a great job they did, which of course they did, but countless more people volunteer in football week in, week out. And we don't sort of celebrate that in the same way. I mean, I understand that, but we sort of take it for granted. But if you want to reconnect with football, if you want to remember why we do it, I would urge you to seek out a Northern League game in particular, and have a pint.
That's correct, George. That's the correct word. It's a celebration. Yeah. Both of Harry's books, both of these two books are a celebration of the Northeast. And the Farther Corner is subtitled A Sentimental Return to Northeast Football. But I think that undersells it a bit. He isn't actually that sentimental. He's melancholy and loving, but it isn't sentimental, because as I say, there's some social commentary in there that's harsh. I'm not harsh, but it might be more than people expect. And one of the reasons is because, as you've just said, George, people like Harry and football fans go to places that the rest of the population don't go. So Harry goes, you know, Harry goes to Easington. The people who write newspaper columns in London about Easington don't go there. But Harry goes to Easington and Horden and, you know, and everywhere that people write commentary about. And he sees it and he's part of it. And that's why he's actually, he would never describe himself as important, but he is really important.
Fantastic. That sounds amazing. I'll definitely have a look at that, and I would urge listeners and readers to do the same and check those two books out. I think with non-league football, you often get a wonderful sense of community that you don't often feel when you go to the likes of Newcastle or Sunderland or somewhere like that. There's something just that little bit special about it, and there's a little bit of a crackle in the air whenever I go to South Shields, and there's little knowing nods of kind of recognition from different people who you've seen over the years who go there, and you just don't get that when you go to the match.
Different, isn't it? I think if you're going to Newcastle on a good day, whenever the club's well run and playing well, or Sunderland whenever it's run well and the team is good, and then that has its own atmosphere. We can't, you know, you can't knock that. Mm. You know, that has its own draw and attraction, which is why there are tens of thousands of people going. Yeah. But it's you know, it isn't often like that in the Northeast. But the non-league grounds have their own different kind of atmosphere. And it's not for everybody, but it is for a lot of people.
But I think, and definitely if we're talking about South Shields, they have absolutely benefited from in particular Sunderland, but I think Newcastle as well. People who feel so far removed and disenfranchised from their club, you know, and South Shields have done brilliantly in capturing that. I mean, in some ways, then they've become so sort of popular, if that's the right word. You've become so well attended that they're not necessarily they're not necessarily a good example, but they're a brilliant example of people believing in something. You know, if it's difficult to believe in Newcastle sometimes, it's very difficult to believe in Sunderland at the minute because of where they are. But it is possible and easy to believe in South Shields because they're so obviously ambitious and successful, and you're close to it, you're close to the action, you're close to the club, you're all part of it. And really, that, I mean, again, it's something I say, it is nostalgic and sentimental when I talk about this. I know it is because that's the kind of person I am, but that's what I want at Newcastle, that's what I want at Sunderland, that's what the stuff I want to see, that's what I want football to be. It's about me and everybody else all buying into the same thing and being better because we're associated with other people. You can feel that 100% at somewhere like South Shields, and to a lesser extent, okay, not every non-league club is well run, certainly not every non-league club is well attended, but you can go to that and be so close to it, and you know that you buying a ticket is going to make a difference there. And so that's a very, very valuable thing, I think.
Absolutely. I think there's no better place than that to finish up then, boys. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been a wonderful hour or so. Thank you, Michael, for joining us again.
Thanks a lot.
And I hope the piece with Harry Pearson goes well, and we'll definitely have a look at that. Thanks a lot, George.
I do too.
Thanks a lot, George.
You're very, very welcome indeed.
Cheers. Excellent. Thanks very much for listening. Ladies and gentlemen out there, this has been Pod on the Tyne. Of course, get yourselves onto www.theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. And we shall speak to you very, very soon. Thanks very much. Goodbye.